Child, we are not the dreams of elder things. We are nothing. Synergistic and simplistic sine waves regurgitating the micro-lattices of atomical structures. Not alive, but a recursive rebounding of the vacuum between the cold dead stars. A filament of absent processes in the spaces deep and foreboding, where infinite time allows for this cosmic dissertation of Gaussian proportions. Unlocked by bug.
I fucking punch him in the mouth. Oh yeah, we've all had that. We've all had that D&D game where you're in the midst of the bad guy's monologue and somebody ends up interrupting it. Is that bad or good? My indication usually is that that's just, showing that he's talking for too long. How do you create punchy villains? We're going to talk about punchy villains today on the ACG&D podcast. I want to say, you guys are my heroes though. Speaking of villains, you're the opposite. You're my heroes. Spread the word. Tell everybody about it. Post about it on forums. Seriously, the smallest step that you can take is still a huge step to me. I love y'all. Everybody else who's out there who doesn't like it, I don't want you. Just go. Everybody who loves this and subscribes and follows, you're the ones I want. Big group hug. Let's discuss punchy villains. Punchy villains is something we can all admit we've probably forgotten to do at one point or another. Even if it's brand new when we're in a game, we get a punchy villain or somebody we think is punchy and they're really not. What do I mean by punchy? I mean, this is a dude or a girl or a character or a fucking robot, it doesn't matter, who punches in whenever they're mentioned. Years later, friends are like, man, remember that dude? Fucking Oogla? That guy was a bastard. And that's what you want. You don't always want your players to just talk about your game world. You want them to talk about the bad guys. The bad guys need to feel real. Heroes are punchy. Why can villains not be? Of course they can be. And we're going to talk about that today. So as you guys have noticed in the last couple podcasts, we've been talking about helping out new players. Today, we're going to talk about helping out new DMs and GMs. And we're going to discuss villainy, the best part of gaming. We're going to discuss how to not make them too long-winded, but also how to make them multifaceted. Let's begin. There's multiple ways to play. We're going to cover the three generic groups here just briefly. The first, a group that buys an adventure book and decides to play that way, or a module in the old speak. What is that? Well, that is a game story that's contained within a module. These are great, but they're often too long for new GMs. They're huge many times. Or you can get one sheets, which are short many times, and maybe they don't exactly fit. And a lot of us don't have every third fucking Tuesday for 6 years to put down to play one single adventure. What if you start to play that adventure and you're like, you know what? I like D&D. I like role-playing. I like being the GM or the DM or a player. I like being a cleric. I like being a fighter. I like being a shooter. I like being a superhero, what have you. But I don't like this actual story. You don't want to end up just jetting it away. That's one negative about adventure books. But the positive is it's all there. The challenges are all there. You can see how difficult it is. However, another negative is people look at it and they're like, oh shit, this isn't a choose your own adventure? No, it doesn't say if the adventures go left, go to page 52. They're actually connected to events and or maps and plot points. Now, this does give you flavor text, which allows for you to say the city sat like an upturned chamber pot on top of the mountain or whatever it says. That is one positive about adventure books and about modules, as well as, again, it's self-contained. It's got your starting and your middle, and it's got your climax and your refractory period if we're talking about sex. It's got it all there. It's really good. However, may not work for you. The second type is freeform. That's the way I play, and it's dangerous. You have to know what you're doing, and it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of, I would say, imbibed fiction, a lot of stuff that you can sort of snip and take and advance and change and morph for you. And it's my favorite kind of GMing personally, but it also requires some thought process prior. Usually I'll come up with an idea and a series of conflicts, and I'll just be like, let's just do this, man. Now, sometimes the conflicts are so big that it does feel like the players are like, okay, we definitely need to do this. And other times it's a little bit sandboxy. It's up to you and how you play. But that's one way of doing it, which is that free form. And again, I ain't going to say that it's easy to do, but I will say that if you're a kind of player like me or a GM like me that likes that free form and that ability to know that what you're doing is at its absolute highest in freedom, that's the way to play. And then your third type is making it yourself. Now, you can make it yourself by snipping bits out and sort of adding in your own elements, freeform, as well as elements from adventures and movies and books and all this stuff. For example, I hear people all the time say, well, I don't want to take something from a movie. Bullshit. Take whatever you can from anybody. Take idioms. Idioms work. Idioms are words said by other people. The word strength is in every D&D game. Don't feel bad if you use strength in your D&D game. It makes no fucking sense. Adjust it. That's all that matters. For example, let's say you love the part of the Matrix where they're on the freeway and they're riding their motorbikes and they're having the big battle on the freeway, right? You love that. You're like, I want a battle on the freeway moment, but for some reason, we decided to play werewolves versus vampires. So you got a werewolf vampire game. That's no problem. People might look at that and be like, that's a problem. To me, that's not a problem. That's a fucking solution right there. Vampires and werewolves, you know what that is? Let's go campy. That's a fucking game about a bunch of werewolves who run semi-trucking lines in Australia. They're driving semi-trucking lines back and forth. They're the original reason why the Babadook and all of these weird kind of mysteries start to pop up and people say that they've seen things out in the outback. That's these guys, right? For years, this group and these rough and tough werewolves have been running the trucking lines, but a vampire group have come from America. Fast and Furious, vampires versus werewolves. Whatever the fuck you do, it doesn't matter because now, boom, you've got a car chase scene. Now, I'm not saying to describe it exactly like the Matrix, and we're going to get to the punchy villain in a second because all this is sort of medding out so that you guys can understand. But let's say you're doing that Matrix car chase, but now you've got werewolves driving Mack fucking trucks, and you've got these vampires, for whatever reason, trying to take it over. Maybe it's just something where they're not trying to take it over. Maybe the main matriarch of this vampire home, the tribe leader, wronged the vampire thousands of years ago, and only now have they figured out where these guys have gone. So this vampire group has been sent, and they've come to destroy this trucking line, and they're in their, you know, they're in their Fast and Furious just crotch rockets. They're in super fast Acuras, and these werewolves are driving their fucking Mack trucks. One night of a game, it could just be called Mack Attack. Whatever. Come up with a name, B-movie that son of a bitch, and now you've got your Matrix scene without being the Matrix, but you can take it, and you can take the various different bits. Or Star Trek, the first, 2009, the first of the remakes. Remember when the Enterprise goes and finds out that the mining ship has destroyed all of the other spaceships? And what's the Enterprise fucking do? What's the Enterprise do? The Enterprise fucking does a barrel roll for no fucking reason. None. There's no reason that you would do a barrel roll in that position. They do a fucking barrel roll, and you hear that as it's fucking all the moaning and the shit hitting it. You can hear the little particulate hitting the top of the hull. It'll be like, you can hear all that. And then it tries to go below another saucer part, and that saucer scrapes a bunch of the armor off the nacelle. Technically not armor in this case. It would just be the hull off of that nacelle. And now you've got that moment. Let's say you guys are driving and one of the vampires gets off an amazing critical shot, destroys the front axle. That semi-truck twists in the air. And in slow motion, you describe what it's like to watch that semi do an almost barrel roll as it flips over. What I'm trying to get to is taking stuff and adjusting it is not bad. It absolutely is an amazing crutch. It's an amazing story device, and you should do it. And you're probably sitting here going, what the fuck? What the fuck does this have to do with punchy villains? It's true. Not a lot. Other than me describing that you can take stuff from things you've seen, which is how I'm gonna lock this down. So let's say you decide to go post-apocalyptic with your friends. You're going to take a little bit from stories, but you want to make your own game. So you're going to go post-apocalyptic. Well, what's the crux? Let's say you've only got one game day to do this, right? You've only got a 6-hour window of real time where people will have the time to do this. So you're like, okay, what kind of story do I want? So you say, you know what? It's post-apocalyptic. You talk to your friends. They've seen some movies. They've read a couple books. Maybe they're super into it. Maybe they were into something else and they want to play something else. So you all decide that you're going to go with post-apocalyptic. So you decide, hey, man, how do I figure this out? Well, let's do something easy. Let's just make up a story as we go. Let's start it right now and say, all right, these four characters, we're going to say two dudes and two chicks. So we're going to say Cindy and Janelle and Max and Levi. Cindy, Janelle, Max, and Levi are going out from the main base for 2 weeks. They're given enough food for 2 weeks, and they're going to go out and try to find a new main base or new supplies. Now, you have to come up with why. Let's say that this at some, we're going to put this in a nondescript area. Let's say in some way this was an industrial dam of some kind. It was a dam that was generating power. And over the years, multiple ones of the generators have died and there's only one remaining. And for that reason, maybe some other reasons, you cannot continue to live there or it's best to go elsewhere. And let's say they've all been living there. So a lot of people have gotten hurt over the years trying to repair these. Maybe they've been killing animals locally nearby to lube them up. And we all know that kind of stuff doesn't work as well as industrial oils. So there's various reasons why they would want to leave. Maybe their well is going bad, or maybe a combination of all these things. So you have Cindy and Janelle and Max and Levi who are gone out. They've been given their food. So you sit down with the players and they're making their characters. The first thing to make a good villain, I got to tell you, a punchy villain is to listen. Listen twice, write once. That's what I usually say. Or listen twice, come up with something once. What do I mean by that? A new villain, or a new player, I'm sorry, making a villain connected to the players is easier than making a villain completely separately, trying to introduce them, make sure that they're dangerous to the players, make sure that they connect. So what I do is I listen. So let's say everybody sits down. Let's say Cindy says, let's say we decide what is one of the reasons why you want to leave. So Cindy says, I had a family member die. I don't want to be here anymore. That's one reason why I want to go. Janelle comes up with another reason. Max comes up with another one. And Levi says, that he's in his nature and demeanor part, he's chosen somebody that's a leader as their nature, but their demeanor, their outward is reckless. Okay. So they want to be the leader, but that energy comes out in a reckless way. Right. And we've known multiple people like that. Now this gives you right away, right? This already gives you sort of a thought process of what's going on. So notate these down. Now players will ask me, they'll be like, hey man, are you writing down what I'm saying? Yes. Make sure that they know. Say, everything you guys say here, you know, we may use in the game, we may not. I also want to know your character so I don't have to ask you, you know, did this happen to you? If you say something that's interesting, you want your own notes, right? That makes total sense. That's why some people share their character sheets or what have you, whatever way you want to do it. But you're notating these. Now, that's two things, right? You've got that everybody's leaving and you have somebody's sibling has passed away. Now, you could add that this is a third thing when you find out that Levi has said that he's pretty reckless, but he wants to be a leader, you know, a lot. Like, that's a big deal for him. So how do you make a bad guy? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, this has already given me a complete idea. Here's your world base. It's a post-apocalyptic world base at an industrial dam where the generators have slowly gone down year by year. We'll say decade by decade. I don't know the time. I would look this up. I would find out how long a generator could last, you know, as long as it was somewhat reliably maintained by, we'll say, machines. This might be a couple years in the future when a lot of that maintenance is via machine, what have you. We're just sort of, you know, a lot of it's going to be up to you to decide what your technological level is. And they've been chosen to leave, or they were allowed to join up if they wanted to go. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to say that there's only one generator left. Why is that? We'll say that a couple years ago, generator two of the last two. So two was destroyed in a fire. It's called, they call it the Night of Fires or the Night of Sorrows, right? Whatever. Or just a really shitty night, whatever. And that is when her brother died. That is also the night that Levi was on guard with him. Levi was on guard, and we're going to say that Levi left in the middle of the night. Now, you can talk to Levi. You can say, hey, choose a number between 1 and 10. Choose odd or even. Or just tell him. Just say, one of the things is you were not at that generator at the time that her brother died. And he can play it off in whatever way he wants. He can play it off as recklessly, like, hey, man, he didn't come with me to do whatever I needed to do. We'll say that Levi was actually going to talk to the current leadership about possibly leaving early. So that's why he's joined this group, because he wanted to do this prior when Generator 2 was still running. And so now you have this mix. Does Levi tell Cindy? We'll say no. We'll say that currently Levi doesn't really know if it's his fault. He internally feels like he should be there. This is something Levi can do. Does he feel like he should have been there? Or does he feel like, hey man, you know what? Nobody listened to me prior. They should have listened to me. We could have all been, you know, safely out of this place when it blew up. One of the two, right? But that's a conflict that now you've got in there. Now you don't want to put two players against each other ever. So you want to make, well, I mean, later you may want to, but when you're starting out, you don't want to. So you want to make sure very clear to Levi, you know, in this kind of circumstance, you'd want to be like, why don't we play it inwardly where you sort of blame yourself, right? Or you could say, do you want to tell Cindy in character that this happened and, you know, maybe there's a strained relationship there. Again, that's up to you guys. But here's how you create a punchy villain. These characters are sent out And you've got your ideas of various different experiences that they may have. But one of them is that they run into Roth. Now, who is that? Roth is somebody who also supposedly died when Generator 2 exploded. But what if he didn't? What if Roth and 11 others actually had escaped? Not the brother, but 11 others had actually escaped. They had sabotaged the generator in hopes it would blow up both of them so it would force everybody out. What if they escaped? And maybe what if in the past couple weeks, the reason why your group is even going out is because scouts have been returning and saying, we smelled wood smoke, or we saw somebody moving in the forest, but they melted into the forest every time we tried to find them. So what you find out is Roth and a group of people have escaped and they're living, we'll say, moderately out in the woods. Maybe there's some dangers there, which you'll introduce also as a story plot. But now what you've got is this crazy moment where Levi, who's a reckless leader, what if he actually agrees with Roth? But now Roth is introduced as somebody who caused Cindy's brother or sister to die. And so you have this triangle already that's been created. And it doesn't have to come at the start at all. You can have something, just jot that down in your head. Be like, when that explosion happened, you know, play it up as your DM and be like, you know, everybody, they sought for the reason and they tracked it down to this thing, blah, blah, blah. And maybe even at the time when they were investigating what caused it to blow up, what if Levi overacted? Because again, he's reckless. What if he led the charge, right? He's like, we gotta find out what the fuck happened. And he's down there. Maybe he, you know, regrettably, maybe he, you know, roughed up a couple people he felt were actually the cause of it. You know, somebody who was supposed to maintain it earlier. You can have all this stuff be done. You can have all of this also not be done where nobody knows. Maybe Levi doesn't feel really much. He doesn't know that Cindy's brother had, basically been killed by Roth, or this sabotage had occurred. And then when you get to this point, you can lay it all on these guys. And that's pretty heavy. You know, I know some people will be like, well, that's too heavy for our group. I'll get it. You know, I know that asking now, I guess, permission or whatever the term is for people to do heavy, you know, discussion in games is required. But if the players are bringing this up, if Cindy herself had said, my brother died and my major reason for going out and doing this kind of stuff is because I just don't want to be there anymore, and I've always wanted to find out, you know, what caused his death, then most likely that's going to be okay with them. And the reason why this is punchy is because imagine that moment. Imagine them in the moment having the twist of fate, right? They find their group. They hug him. They're like, Roth, you're okay. And Roth lies. He's like, yeah, when the explosion went off, I fell out of the side of the dam and somebody saved me, blah, blah, blah. And you can, everybody can tell there's something a little off. You know, maybe the character's like, hey man, we should go tell the other people that you're living here. And Roth is like, yeah, so we should, but let's wait till tomorrow. And you're like, why would he want to wait, right? But what if you find out that maybe Roth that prior night had also gone and talked to the leadership about escaping, about leaving because he felt trapped? The current leadership was like, no, we don't want to do that. And so he knows that they're going to assume that he blew up the generator. Maybe even Cindy and maybe Janelle, who I haven't mentioned much, or Max, or your other two supporting characters, and maybe both of them are like, hey, something's up. Now, the reason why this is punchy is because for Cindy and Levi, it has a personal connection. But what about Janelle and Max? How do you make a personal connection here? Again, it's up to what the characters say. Let's say Janelle, she has decided to leave because her parents have both died inside of the mountain, right? And she's decided to leave. She then, of course, is going to hold some kind of, you know, hope that this nice place, this place Roth has made, is a place that's safe. So what if she now is sort of like, hey, Levi, man, hey, Cindy, you know, bad shit happened, and I'm sorry for your brother's death, bad shit happened, but this place is safe. They didn't mean for it to happen, right? They didn't mean for it to happen, but this place is safe. Let bygones be bygones. And of course, you can have Cindy being like, bygones be bygones. This is my brother we're talking about, right? Again, you don't want to put players against each other right away. So you certainly don't have to do any of this. But what I'm stating is those are ways that you can have a connective period. You can also take it completely away. You can have Janelle and Cindy both being, you know, sisters from another mister, right? Fist bumping and shit. Maybe they're two sisters. Maybe Cindy and Janelle truly are sisters and they both lost a brother, and you decide this group isn't ready for that kind of headier, heavy conflict. So you're like, what if Cindy and Janelle are sisters and Levi and Roth are friends, and or so Levi and Max are friends, and no matter what Levi does, Max always has his back, right? What if Max is the solid foundation that the recklessness of Levi usually is? Maybe even replacing Cindy's brother in that position. And the reason why this is punchy again is because it has a connective tissue to everybody. It's not only something that has a personal connection, but now it's a connection to the very place they live. And it's the emphasis for them having actually left in the first place, because we don't know if they would have even left if none of this had happened, or would they have left prior to this happening? Prior to this quest, because, you know, the discussion between the leadership had caused them to decide that, you know, going out and investigating other places to live was safer. All of these things you can do as you're just sitting there. And this can all happen in like 3 minutes. Use a mind map. That's what I would do. I would write down the word Cindy. I'd write down the word Levi. I'd write down the word Max and Janelle. And I would just come together and just draw lines. You know, a lot of times what I'll do is if I have a villain, like I've decided Roth is going to be the villain, I'd put a V on him and a dotted line to anybody he's got a direct connection to. Dotted line would for sure go to Levi. And you would say, you know, you could say something like, you know, apprentice, like Levi in a way was his apprentice. You could do a dotted line to Cindy and say, possibly by action or reaction caused Cindy's brother or Janelle's brother to die, right? Maybe Max doesn't have a connection to him. Now, a lot of people will think having no connection to a villain means they won't work in a game. And I can tell you that is not true. You've got Cindy and Janelle and Levi who all have a connection. Max's connection to the villain, in this case, possibly Roth, is actually making sure that everybody else does not let the villain corrupt their lives. You don't want Levi killing Roth, right? That would be horrendous. It would ruin him, and he would never probably be able to be a leader again. Cindy's brother died in these weird circumstances. Is she going to, you know, enact some kind of vengeance? Is Janelle? But Max might be the person where the villain is the situation. It's not only Roth. Roth was a position in it for sure, but it's the situation itself. And he might be the one person who's got that controlling stake in everything where he's like, hey, man, let's step back. Let's just think this through. He might be like, let's go back. Let's tell the leaders that these guys are alive. And then what does Roth do? Does Roth say, hey, man, we can't let you go back. We can't let you risk what we have here. So you either stay with us or you take your chances, you know, walking away from us with your back turned, right? And by the way, this is ignoring the fact that the old leadership could be the bad guys. There could be all kinds of stuff you do here. But what's important is you listened at least twice before you really started to draw out or idealize your villain. Listen to Cindy. Listen to Levi talking about their characters. I like to listen to everybody. Make a villain that sort of fits. You can make a villain fit in multiple ways too. Not only physical connections like we have here with family members dying, but you can also have, you know, that kind of psychological connection where maybe you decide that none of this is connected to Cindy's brother. None of it's connected to Levi, but Roth is just a charismatic leader who decided it was okay to take 12 of the most skilled people from a group and knowing that they may die because he wanted to lead outside of the facility that bad, right? Charismatic leader, the person who's probably willing to do everything. And you can have it that way. What if Levi is incredibly reckless, but he wants to be a leader, and he butts up against Roth, who is also reckless? Obviously, he did this. A little bit more methodical, maybe, but also wants to be a leader. And what if there's a situation there where maybe Roth is like, hey, man, you know, maybe they have a discussion or two. You're doing some charisma checks and you're like, you know what? Levi and Roth are coming to sort of a bumping to the heads here. What are we going to do, right? What if they end up showing up and Roth and the people aren't doing well? What if they're not doing well at all and they've actually been trying to figure out what to do and maybe they find out that Levi can talk them back in and this entire thing is going to be a ploy and Roth will be like, we want to go back. We want to tell them we're sorry. You know, we'll accept any, you know, any kind of punishment. And what the real deal is that Roth has found out that the outside world is too dangerous and they're going back in and they're going to take control from the old leadership. Because let's be honest, Roth is the kind of character that isn't going to return and isn't going to give up control. The reason why these kind of things work is because you've taken a little bit of your own world, which was your idea of this industrial dam and post-apocalyptic, and you've also taken in parts of the characters and what they've created. And again, whether it be a physical connection or a psychological connection, you've tied them in and you're going to make it punchier. You're going to make it punchier. You know, you can do this kind of stuff by looking at people in history or in movies that are really charismatic leaders. The TV show Jericho has one of the characters' dads. Well, he's not a dad, actually. He his son is actually is not there, but he's a very charismatic outlaw leader, and he's charismatic because he gets shit done. He's one of those kind of people that whenever there's stuff to do and get something done, he can do it. But downtime is his, it's just his disaster, right? And his way of doing things doesn't ever really fit with everybody else's. It's not always about the struggle to be a bad guy with him. It's actually, and sometimes he'll do good guy stuff, but you can always tell he's just right at the raggedy edge, right? It's always about everything being about him living at the end. Even if it comes up, oh, it's his daughter, actually. He has a daughter in the TV show. But you can do that. You can look at various different characters, TV shows that have cops in it. You can look at them for military leaders, military shows for military leaders. You can look at The 100 for how team dynamics work in a post-apocalyptic world. You can look at Road Warrior for your ideas for various different physicalities of damage that happens in post-apocalyptic, where the car turns over and Max is out there with his little bowl, you know, soaking up the gasoline, and even gets the rag and gets the gasoline and gets it off of the dirt and squeezes it into that bowl, because gasoline, petrol, is so important. These are things that, as we continue to move forward, I'll collect even more of my thoughts here and start moving forward. But this is an ideal that, when it comes to punchy characters, like I said, listen twice, note once. That's sort of what works for me, especially when starting. And it doesn't mean you can't dramatically increase that later. And again, doesn't matter, and doesn't say that you can't make a villain that has nothing to do with the players ever. That can also work. It's just, this is for beginning GMs and DMs, and sort of giving you a little bit of a crux, giving you a little bit of something to bounce off, so that everybody, every single time Cindy, Janelle, Max, or Levi roleplay, their players roleplay, every single time that they do, that technically has the ability to give you more data that you can build into your story, right? It's not always about being the elf who's fucking petting every tree they walk by, right? I get that, but that doesn't really always add anything other than flavor. However, if you start to build this story around these various different things that happen, everything Cindy says, or Max says, or Levi says, or Janelle says, can actually be possibly story fodder for you to build on and make a more multi-textured feel to the game world. So anyway, that's a short bit for me for making punchy villains. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, give it a thumbs up. If you didn't, give it a thumbs down. Check out Patreon. It would absolutely help. Always Spotify, iTunes, Anchor, Radio TuneIn, Stitcher. We're on everything. Peace out and enjoy the rest of your week.